Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook VIP podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. It's financial month here at Lifebook, and I have my father, John Butcher, in the studio.
Hey, everybody.
Tell me your thoughts about the financial category.
Oh, man. Financial category is awesome. It's intense. It's a challenge. You get it wrong, it can really cause a lot of stress. And you get it right, it can be really, really great. But you know what? You know, a lot of people that are rich aren't happy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that are poor are happy. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily control your happiness. But like I've always said, with a financial category, it really allows you to expand who you already are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're a kind, generous person, it allows you to do that at a much higher level. If you're an asshole, it allows you to be an asshole at a much higher level.
Good point.
Right? I love this category. This category has spiritual significance to me. And, you know, it's something I focused a lot of time and energy on, and really excited about this interview, mm-hmm. Jordan.
It's interesting you said getting it right. I like that word choice because it doesn't necessarily mean succeeding in finance and accumulating wealth.
That's right.
You may have a realization where you're really fascinated by minimalism.
Yeah, man. I want to live in a shack by the beach. That's my vision, you know, and that's what I'm going for, and I don't need much money every day, and I'm gonna fish. And, you know, there are so many different ways to live your life. So many different visions that could work for you. You've just got to figure out in this particular category what the best path is for you, all things considered.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Let's get started with some listener questions.
Let's do it.
First question from Sam R. What are some of the most effective strategies you've used to build your net worth?
Well, in my particular case, I'm an entrepreneur. Which basically means, when you hear that word, what that word means is unemployable by others.
It's true.
Not fit to be employed by anybody but myself. So I've really invested in my own businesses. That's what, you know, my core investment has been. Other than that, I know contemporary art very well. I don't invest in the stock market because I don't understand it at all, and I've gotten my ass handed to me many times.
I'd like for you to talk about that, your experience in the stock market. I don't know if you want to wait till after this question.
No, I can go ahead and do that.
It's an interesting story.
Yeah, well, when I was young, you know, that's what I considered to be the big boy investment because that's what all the grown-ups were investing in, mm-hmm. right? IBM stock and everything. So I started doing that. I started by myself at first, and you can't do very well unless you have a knack for it. Like my brother Don has a knack for it. Mm-hmm. He just does. He loves it and he's good at it. I'm not. I never got it. I never understood it. To me, it was just basically like friggin' putting a dollar in a slot machine and pulling the hand around and seeing what happens, right? So I wasn't good at it on my own. And then my brother and I had a horrible experience. We worked with a stockbroker for many, many years who ended up basically extorting from us and churning our account. And it was horrible. I mean, I caught this guy and I called my brother and I said, Don, do you know how much you really have in your account? Not how much he says you have in your account, but you need to get the statements and check it out. And that was a bad situation. So we got kind of taken for a ride by somebody, and that wasn't a good situation.
It's like sickening.
Yeah, it was horrible. Then I, you know, got creamed like everybody else in the tech crash of 2001, and I just decided this is almost 10 years ago, and it was Garrett Gunderson who was the one that turned me on to the concept that you shouldn't invest in anything that you don't fully understand, and you know, not even a question that I don't fully understand it. I don't even partially understand the stock market. I don't, you know, there's a bunch of paper churning to me. So I gave that up in favor of investing in contemporary art, which I do understand very, very well. It's a niche sort of investment, but it's something that I've studied all my life. So that's really the only investment expertise that I have. My own businesses, contemporary art, and then the other thing that I've invested in that has been probably the best investment I've ever made is whole life insurance. And Garrett also. Garrett's name will come up a lot in this interview because Garrett's my financial guy. He's and I know a lot of you listening to this know Garrett Gunderson's Wealth Factory, Freedom Fast Track. He's educated me tremendously in this category. And he talks a lot about whole life insurance too. We took out a giant insurance policy on my dad's life decades ago, and it ended up being the best investment we ever made. It basically turns you into your own bank. The cash value stacks up. So that's what I would say have been my most effective investment strategies. Although I don't consider myself to be a very good investor. I'm good at making money. I haven't been particularly great at managing it. So I really need help around that area. I need a good infrastructure, a good team around me. And I need to make the right decisions as far as what to focus on. And those are the three areas that I focus successfully on.
So your strategy is to take Garrett Gunderson's advice and invest in what you know.
That's exactly right. Yep.
I had him on the Lifebook podcast that we'll be launching to the world soon, separate from the VIP podcast. And he said something that was really interesting that you just touched on, which is the stock market and these retirement plans have been institutionalized and kind of dogmatized into our society. So that's what you do.
Yeah,
you said, I put my money in the stock market because that's what you were told to do.
That's, people are hypnotized. That's what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work out very often from what I understand.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Next question from Lisa F. What would you say are your financial strengths? What are your financial weaknesses and how do you work to mitigate them?
That's a great question. You know, Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach, one of the most awesome business coaches in the world, says that in business, there are three types of people. There are people who make it up, people who make it real, and people who make it reoccur. I'm the guy who makes it up. So innovation and creating value for others is my core strength. I'm really good at making money because I'm really good at identifying value streams, coming up with new ideas on how to make people's lives better. I'm okay at making it real. I'm a pretty good executor as long as the execution is in a certain realm, mainly creativity. I'm not a numbers guy, Jordan. I'm a word guy. So I've got to have a lot of support around me when it comes to numbers. And as far as making it reoccur, which is basically management, I'm horrible at that. So I've got to build big teams around me when it comes to being successful. I lead the charge. I direct the vision. I innovate the product, but I've got to very quickly hand it off to somebody else to make sure that it becomes real at the level that it needs to, so the details are attended to. And to make it reoccur is something that I'm just horrible at, you know? So I've got to have good teams around me. So my strength would be creating value. My weakness would be financial models. And here's what I mean by that. What we say in Lifebook, and I've added a little bit to this over the years, is the way to create wealth for yourself is to find work that you love so that you have the passion to get up out of bed every day and do your job. Find work that you're good at so that you're competent. That work has to create value for others so they're willing to write you a check. And it's all got to be done inside of a financial model that works or you're not going to make any money on it. I have had situations in my life where I've loved the work, I've been good at the work, I've created a tremendous amount of value for others, but because the financial model wasn't figured out right, I didn't make money, even though I got all those three things right.
Right.
So I've learned over time that I'm not great at financial models, and I need to have good people around me to bounce my ideas off of and help me develop good, solid financial models. Another thing I've never been great at is managing my money. I need help with that. I need to have a good team. You know, without my CFO and my financial team, I'd be a mess. I don't like to spend a lot of time digging deep into numbers. Some people love that, and that gives them a lot of juice. I wish that was me. I wish I had a better passion for it. But, you know, I was never good at math at school. I probably, you know, gave myself that self-image early on. Well, I'm not very good at this, which is unfortunate. You know, but that's what happened.
Good word choice.
And then I got into this life where I got all these business opportunities, and I rolled up my sleeves and took a lot of advantage of the business opportunities that I had. And I went far, very, very far financially, while not, you know, having good fundamentals with numbers. And what that means, it can be done. There's many, many examples of of guys like me that have been very successful in history, but you better have a good team around you. That's the only way you're going to make it if you're a guy like me. Mm-hmm.
But that's a strength in and of itself, recognizing that you're not great at making it real and you're horrible at making it
good
recur.
Good call.
So that's a huge strength, and realize who you need to bring on.
That's right. And that's where rock stars fall apart, people like that, that you know, are like me. That's my same MO. They're great at what they do and the money's flowing in, but they have no clue that they're going through all of it. It's slipping through their fingers, and they're not able to identify the fact that they've got a major weakness, mm-hmm. and they better build a team around it to make sure that they're okay when they're 50, because they're not always going to be 28-year-old rock stars, right?
No, and I wonder, does anyone have the capability to rock all those categories? Is there anyone out there that does that?
I think that there are probably, I mean, I'm wondering about Steve Jobs.
Right.
An incredible creative genius, no question about it. But also an amazing programmer, a very powerful left brain and right brain, mm-hmm. Built the most valuable company in the world. I would imagine there probably are, but I also would imagine they're few and far between. Mm-hmm. So good call, man. If you are really, really good at numbers and that's your thing, you may have weaknesses in other areas, and you may need to put teams in place to mitigate whatever your weaknesses are, mm-hmm. wherever they are.
Exactly.
That's the point of partnerships and collaboration, right? Mm-hmm. We can't do it all, most of us at least. Mm-hmm. So we need to get involved with great people to be able to maximize our strengths and minimize our weaknesses.
It's true. Love it. Next question from Kendra D. What's your savings strategy that has proven most effective?
Well, here we have, you know, I have not saved much cash in my life. What I do is I put my money into art, into real estate, and frankly, into my retirement account. As dopey as that sounds, my little 401k mm-hmm. has grown big over the years, and that's a very standard thing. But I'm happy about that mm-hmm. and grateful for it. So I've got my retirement account, I've got my whole life insurance policy, I've got the real estate, and I don't invest in real estate, meaning, you know, make money from real estate. Mm-hmm. I put my money into the real estate that Missy and I and our kids enjoy, quality of life thing, and the art that hangs on my wall. So mm-hmm. those have been my saving strategies.
And it's interesting because you can't enjoy a pile of savings bonds the same way you can enjoy
I've always said that.
Clinking around gold coins or hanging art on
That's
your
wall. That's
right,
man.
Doing it every day.
You know, it's funny. When Garrett, we were our first year together almost 10 years ago. And he was telling me, John, you suck at the stock market, man. Look at what's happened. Look at this Holocaust that's gone on here versus your artwork that you've invested in. Are you kidding me? And I realized I always considered my art investing as a high powered hobby. And I would get all sort of, you know, I would get all frantic and worried if I was spending too much money on art as opposed to like a big boy investment like Apple stock or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Garrett's the one that told me, John, this is a real thing and you should be doing more of it. And he woke me up to the fact that I was good at it. And I've always loved the idea of my wealth hanging on my walls, mm-hmm. and I can walk past it every day and get joy from it every day, as opposed to that Apple stock certificate that you don't ever see, right? You get
exactly.
financial statements, but you can't enjoy that. Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting point, Jordan. When I think about my investment strategies, I can enjoy all my investments. Mm-hmm. I really do. Other than like my life insurance policy, but that's a nice little perk.
Totally. And what else is like that? Definitely wine, classic cars.
You can turn just about any hobby or any expertise into an investment strategy. Mm. Like Greg Schulte, our awesome Lifebook member and our chiropractor, he loves antique cars. That is something that he literally should go into as an investment strategy. Mm-hmm. If you know it, Pat Gintempo loves fine wine. He's got a very valuable collection. Mm. You know, you can turn just about any one of your passions or areas of expertise into an investment strategy these days, which is a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. Next question from Casey S. Do you have any catchy sayings like Garrett Gunderson's paraphrased saying, It's better to deliver more value and make more than it is to save a dollar. Anything like that that I can reflect on?
Well, I've already said one of them that Garrett gave me. Never invest in anything that you don't fully understand, ever. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, never invest in anything you're not an expert in. You're going to get your ass handed to you. Mm-hmm. And then I've got another one from Lifebook member Brian Kay, who's one of the smartest Lifebook members out there. And he said, return of your capital is more important than return on your capital. Or return of your investment is more important than return on your investment. So many people are focused on, how much extra am I going to make if I take this principle and invest it? Mm-hmm. He's saying the most important thing that you need to do is make sure you get that principle back. Mm. That's more important, return of that principle, than return on that principle.
Well, I've seen American Greed. That's what happened, is these stories are too good to be true. And they keep getting these returns where their numbers are going higher and higher and higher, and you can't pull out because your money's gone because it's too good to be true.
Yeah, well, that's exactly. And I've had I've probably had, I don't know, maybe a dozen times in my life where I have invested my principal and not gotten it back. I've done some unbelievably stupid stuff.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? Like one of my best friend's buddies was investing in Russia for you know, and just getting these huge returns. And all you had to do is write a $300,000 check and send it over to Russia.
Oh, no.
All right? And this was after the Berlin Wall came down. No, that's a great idea. Let's go ahead and write a $300,000. So, and listen, it worked 12 straight times.
Yeah.
Until I did it.
Exactly.
And then bye-bye principle. You know, screw that. We're not running that program anymore.
Yeah.
So I love that quote. Return of your investment is more important than return on your investment.
Mm-hmm. Next question from Marcia P. Do you have any financial resource recommendations? Books, seminars, courses, or anything like that?
You know, I don't study finances very much, obviously, which is why I'm ignorant.
Well, this isn't your strongest
category.
But
let me tell you something, though. I am very strong in the financial category from a certain standpoint, and it's philosophically. I understand the fundamentals of wealth creation down into the fabric of my being. And where I got that was Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. So Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead were the two books that I read early. I was, maybe in my early 20s, late teenager. I think I might have been 21 when I read Atlas Shrugged for the first time, and it changed me at a cellular level. It gave me almost a spiritual connection to the creation of wealth. I realized that the reason that the human race has lifted the way that it's lifted from the Dark Ages is because of producers, is because of inventors, is because of industrialists and capitalists and the people that have created the products and the services that have made our lives better, safer, easier, or basically these are the people that have lifted the human race. And so that's when my romantic attachment with money really began, almost my spiritual attachment. Mm-hmm. So that was significant, because that's the one thing in this category that I really get is the fundamentals of wealth creation is creating value for other people. That's how to lift yourself. And that's a very spiritual thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So Atlas Shrugged is what sort of started my philosophical relationship with money. Missy and I did Garrett's program, which was difficult because it was, for me, it wouldn't be difficult for everybody, but it's hard for me to understand some of this stuff. It was difficult to navigate, but incredibly educational, and I would recommend it to anybody who wants to learn more about wealth creation. A couple other books that I'm going to throw in here, Essentialism by Greg McKeown. I've read it three times. This book changed my financial life by teaching me the power of focus, because I tend to fight a lot of battles on a lot of fronts. And that book was a game changer. Lifebook VIPs, if you have not read Essentialism, run out and buy it as soon as this recording is over. Mm-hmm. It's friggin' awesome. Mm-hmm.
Love it.
There's another book that was referred to me by Lifebook member Juraj from Slovakia, who's one of our ultimate clients and really, really great friends. It's called Anti-Fragile. And it's an incredible book that talks about, if you're an entrepreneur, that talks about how to take your offering or your company, if you own a company, and not only make it less fragile to economic circumstances, but engineer it in a way where if things turn bad, it's literally anti-fragile, which means that a bad economy will spur its growth. It's really, really interesting. And the author of that book, his last name is Taleb, T-A-L-E-B. And then the only other thing that I'd say is a financial resource that has been huge for Missy and I. And you guys, I recommend this to everybody out there. And that is networking groups. So, this is me putting my money where my mouth is when I go out there and say, you know, you should invest in your own personal development. Missy and I are members of Joe Polish's 100K group, which we pay $125,000 a year to be involved in this high-level mastermind that has 16 people in it, some of the best marketers on the planet, unbelievable people. And Joe has a group called 25K that costs $25,000 a year, which I know is a lot of money, but I swear to God, our first month in that group, we made our money back. That's what happens. You know, 25K has like 150 to 200 amazing entrepreneurs from all disciplines of life. Joe puts on an incredible event, and that's been a massive catalyst for our businesses and our financial life. Mm-hmm. Highly, highly recommend investing in yourself when it comes to this particular category. And the best way that we found to do that so far is high-level networking groups. Mm-hmm.
Next question from Tony R. Who have been your greatest financial inspirations and influences?
Great question, Tony. You know, I haven't really had a lot of financial influences in my life, like direct influences. I look to historical figures when I think about the people that I really admire, right? So, and the first group of people that come to mind are, there's a great History Channel video series called The Men Who Built America. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. This is about the great industrialists, Carnegie, steel, Rockefeller, oil, and kerosene, lit New York before Edison, and Edison was one of them too, who invented the electric light bulb, Vanderbilt, railroads. So these are the people who literally built America, who made it so that we could have the greatest economic surge in the history of the human race with no close second. You know, and that was a different deal because we know from hardcore history, Jordan, that that was never possible in the human race before. Wealth pre-1500, wealth was about owning land. Mm-hmm. The landowners were rich.
Yeah, owning land and subjugating people.
Exactly. Those that was the deal. It was about conquest. Mm-hmm. It was about how much land you could own, how much taxes you could get from the serfs or the peasants, whatever, and how many armies you could pay for. And that was what wealth was about until the Industrial Revolution. And then all of a sudden it switched to manufacturing. And you know, Henry Ford was another one of the men who built America. He invented the concept of the assembly line, you know, that kind of production. And that blew the human race up, literally just surged us forward as a species in a massive way. So I've got a tremendous amount of respect for those people. And I when I think about, you know, my influences, the people that I really admire when it comes to creating wealth, they're at the top of the list. And then there's another group because 100 years later, after manufacturing was very well established worldwide, came the information age. And then you've got people like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs who changed the world in a different way. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I love about Steve Jobs, who's a hero of mine, despite the fact that I guess he was an asshole from a personal perspective, I've read his biography and I watched the movie and I've read a lot on Steve Jobs. And I wish that he would have had a better life, a better personal life. He didn't have that dialed in, unfortunately.
Needed life book.
I would have given anything if I could have taken him through life book. Seriously. He would have, oh my God, would I have loved to have read Steve Jobs' life book. But anyway, what Steve Jobs did that most people don't understand or give him credit for, is he turned the entire world into a bunch of artists. When Missy and I got together when we were kids, we were in our 20s, we were musicians and we made records. We were, and then at that time, Chicago was the hotbed for techno-industrial dance, which was for a very short period of time, it was the hot genre in the world, and Chicago was the epicenter. So we were making basically dance club music. Mm-hmm. And our first record, which was called Lovers and Killers, that album cost us almost $100,000 and took 14 months to record. We recorded at Streeterville Studios. We were mixing on a $1 million Neve console. And we were going in at odd hours so that we could get the lower hourly rate to make this record.
That's why you got the savings of $100,000, the steal.
Exactly.
Absolute
steal.
Well,
there you go. A record cost $250,000 to make. A seriously professional, professional producer, record company record cost $250,000 to make. Easy. Mm-hmm. That was a low budget, right? Today, you could buy 20 recording studios for what we paid for our first album. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a photographer. Didn't used to be like that. You used to have to friggin' get your film developed at, take your little rolls of film in and mm-hmm. get them developed to see how the pictures turned out. Mm-hmm. It was expensive to be a photographer. Today, everyone's a videographer. Mm-hmm. Everyone can shoot amazing video on their iPhone. Didn't used to be like that. Today, everyone can edit their stuff. It's unfriggin' believable what's happened in the world. Steve Jobs just absolutely drove the growth of that whole sector and made it so that the masses have access to things that they would never have had access to before, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That's miraculous. So these are the people that I admire, mm-hmm. the people that have moved the world forward, cracked open, business models and created opportunities for people.
While still pulling the rug out from certain industries.
Exactly.
Which is fascinating in itself.
It's been, the record industry's done, dude.
Beautiful destruction.
Blockbuster is no longer a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was and there's no end in sight to that. It's Shiva energy, which means in order for creation to occur, destruction has to happen first. Mm-hmm. It's creative destruction. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that I admire who turn the world upside down and give opportunity to people who, before that, have not had that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Next question from Neil F.
Neil!
Powerful Neil F.
How you doing, bro?
What personality trait has been the key to your success in this category?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm going to say that for me personally, creativity is my thing. So I have to, thank my lucky stars and all the ancestors and the gods and the universe for that. But you know what they say is the most important thing when it comes to achieving your goals, your financial goals, your business goals is persistence. Mm. That's what everybody says. Your ability to persevere, which entails grit. It entails, you got to get up out of bed in the morning when it's hard. It's always going to be hard. Nothing great comes easy. You're always going to have to figure out how to persevere. It brings to mind one of the most famous commencement speeches ever that Winston Churchill gave to, I believe it was Oxford. It was a 7-word speech. He walks up to the podium, saunters up to the podium, and he gets up there and he says, looks at the audience and he says, never, ever, 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 ever give up. And then he turns around and walks out.
That's awesome.
Isn't that
That's
great?
Awesome.
That's what it is, man. It's persistence. It's tenacity. You got to keep the faith. The financial category is tough. The career category can be tough, mm-hmm. You've got to be willing to weather the storms and keep going and going and going until you finally break through to success.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Next question from Yvette R. How can I create income online outside of a traditional job using my highly developed consciousness whilst making a contribution to others in the shortest amount of time possible? Yvette's getting after it.
That's awesome.
Yvette is totally going after
it. That's awesome, Yvette. That's what we all want to do, right? And I mean, if you want to create an online business, what you should do, and if you don't know where to start, what you should do is you should buy one of the great courses on creating an online business. They're not expensive. Let me think. I think Brendan Burchard probably is the guy that's best known for this. So Brendan teaches you how to create a simple sales funnel and how to create a product and how to basically monetize if you're living at a good high level of consciousness and if you have value to create for other people, he teaches you how to monetize that. So my recommendation would be to go out there and get a course and learn what to do and then do exactly what the course says. Don't friggin' deviate from it. Do exactly what it says. And once you get it up and running, that's your baseline, and then you can start experimenting on your own. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I would do, Yvette, is I would read the book called E-Myth, because that is one of the most respected books when it comes to this space. E-Myth, E stands for entrepreneur. And because everyone, you know, we shouldn't say everyone, but it's widely believed out there that entrepreneurship is easier than it is. Business is hard. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurship is hard. That's mm-hmm. the bottom line. And what this book, E-Myth, this guy talks about, there's a great metaphor in this book. He talks about this lady that loves to make cakes, and she's frigging great at making cakes, and she's known for making cakes. And her friends are all like, oh my God, you're the best cake maker in the world. You should start a business making cakes. And she finally says, yeah, you're right. I'm frigging awesome at making cakes. I'm going to start a business making cakes. So she starts her business. And a year later, what's she doing? She's got a bunch of employees. She's trying to figure out her books. She's got a place where she's got to pay her rent. She's got to figure out how to deal with her landlord. She's got to figure out how to advertise and get customers into her door. Mm-hmm. She's got to figure out. She's doing every friggin' thing in the world but making cakes, mm-hmm. which is what she's great at. So you've got to be careful turning your hobby into a business. It can literally ruin your hobby. Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen. It's probably happened to me in my life before, mm-hmm. you know? So my recommendation would be buy a great program and listen to the E-Myth on audio or read that book, because that will help you avoid some landmines that you could otherwise run into. Mm-hmm.
Final question from Jesse K. What do you consider to be the spiritual side of money? What is your experience with money as a vehicle for the soul?
Great question, Jesse. And you know what I'm going to do to answer this question, which is about the relationship between finances and spirituality. I'm going to start with spirituality. So I think I've told this story before, but it's a fun story, so I'm going to tell it again. When Nathaniel Brandon, who was my big consultant with the Life, he was really the only one that I deeply consulted with on the Lifebook program. When we were working on the scripts for the original videos, we got to the spiritual category, and I basically said, Nathaniel, how am I going to handle this category? You know, my spirituality is, I'm not a religious person, and I know that most of these people are going to be religious, and probably 85% of the people that do the program from America are going to be Christian. If it goes worldwide, I'm going to be dealing with a bunch of religions. I don't know that it's the right thing for me to do to share my own experience. This is a landmine. How am I going to handle this? We talked about it for quite a bit of time, and we came up with the idea. He made the suggestion. He said, John, why don't you do a little bit of a research study on the commonalities between the great religions? What do they all have in common? What do they all focus on at the end of the day? What are the common denominators here? If you talk about those things, that's probably going to be a way to, because the thing is, you can't do the spiritual program and not say something significant. It can't be weak. It's got to be deep. But at the same time, you can't take a position that ostracizes or leaves people out. Mm-hmm. So if you take a look at these common denominators, there may be a thread in there that will work for everybody. So that's exactly what I did, Jordan. We researched for about a month, and we came up with four components that the five great religions seem to have in common. And here's what they were. The first one was the sense that of being benevolently connected to all that exists. Connectedness, mm-hmm. being connected to God, the universe, everything. The feeling of being at home in the universe, right? Being in the right place, That was the first thing. Mm-hmm. The second thing was what I call self-actualization, or being the best person you can be. All the great religions talk about evolving as a human being and becoming a better man, becoming a better woman.
Right.
Right? Self-actualization. The third is contribution, making the world a better place, contributing to others, lending a helping hand. All of them have that. And the last thing, what should flow from those three things, is a sense of inner peace, a sense of serenity, mm-hmm. peacefulness. They all sort of tip in the direction of inner peace. Mm-hmm. So when I think about the financial category, I believe that all four of those elements are in play. At the end of the day, creating wealth for yourself, if you're going to do it the way I believe it should be done, which is not selling drugs, which is not selling, nuclear arms, which is not churning a bunch of paper and mm-hmm. tricking the system, mm-hmm. the way it should be done is creating value. At the end of the day, that's the only way wealth is ever created, and all those other people are parasites on top of that system. Mm-hmm. Now, you can take a look at nuclear arms, and you can take a look at selling drugs and ask yourself, is that really creating value for somebody? Well, yes, heroin is a friggin' value to a heroin addict. Mm-hmm. Is it the proper kind of value? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is the principle is still the same. It's about contribution. The fundamental of wealth is about contribution. That leads to self-actualization. Like I think about when Missy and I decided to take Lifebook to the world and make that contribution, that created a ton of self-actualization for us. We had to go down a path that had us thinking the thoughts, doing the work, living the life that made us the best people we can possibly be. We can't go out there very well and do Lifebook with integrity if we're not living the Lifebook lifestyle, right?
Right.
So it entailed a tremendous amount of self-actualization. And those two things led to a lot of connectedness with other people, and a lot of inner peace for us. So I feel that the creation of wealth, the way that we do it, and the way that I think that it should be done ideally, has incredible spiritual significance for me, which is, at the end of the day, Jordan, I can't get excited about a business that isn't making a major contribution to the world. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be the guy that sells, ball bearings that make wheels go better, even though that is a good contribution to the world. But I look at my companies. I've got Lifebook, which creates transformation in the lives of people. Artists for Addicts. I don't even need to say, mm-hmm. how that helps people. Purity Coffee, our quest is to create the healthiest coffee on the planet. Coffee is a natural superfood that has health and wellness properties that very few people understand. We're spreading that message throughout the world. Precious Moments has donated millions and millions of dollars to charity and makes people, gives people hope and comfort. These are the things that turn me on. These are the reasons that I'm in business, to make the world a better place. So I just see an incredible connection. Doesn't always happen for everybody, but for me, that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So great question, Jesse. Thanks so much for asking that. Mm-hmm.
Love it, man. Love it. We're going to wrap this one up real quick here. Lifebook VIP members, do me a favor and write in some questions every month. We love hearing from you guys. We're getting some amazing questions. And really looking forward to those. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. Love you, VIPs. Thanks so much, JB. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. Thanks, man. Lifebook VIPs, I'll see you next time on the Lifebook Podcast.